Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Thursday, May 21st. I'm your reader, Jim Hill. First up, let's have a look at the weather for eastern Iowa. In the Cedar Rapids, Iowa City area today, it'll be mostly cloudy. Wind from the east-southeast at 5 to 15 miles per hour. The high will be 68, the low 55. Tomorrow, Friday, it'll be partly to mostly cloudy, a high of 73, a low of 58. And on Saturday, we'll have a chance of rain and storms, a high of 79, a low of 62. On Sunday, we'll have a chance of rain and storms again, and a high of 80, a low of 64. The normal high for today is 75, the normal low, 52. The record high was 95 in 1921. The record low was 32 in 1931. The sun will set tonight at 8:26. It will rise tomorrow at 5:40. We have a little weather story today, this one from Justin Gertz. Weather questions answered. The First Alert Storm Team has been doing Weather Academy Wednesday on Facebook Live for the past several weeks. Tuesday was open for questions, and here are some nuggets of knowledge from that. The highest official one-day rainfall in Iowa was 13.18 inches in Atlantic on June 14, 1998. Meteorologists find a tornado's strength by surveying the damage afterward and using that information to estimate its wind speed. But there is research to try to figure out how strong it might be as it's happening. Iowa has an average of about 45 tornadoes annually, but it varies year to year. And the largest tropical system was Typhoon Tippett at 1,400 miles wide, the distance from Des Moines to Miami. And again, that little weather story is from meteorologist Justin Gertz. And now, let's take a look at the front page of the Gazette, where the lead story is all about reopening. Culture camping back before Memorial Day. This story is by Rob Beauchart of the Gazette. Bars can reopen next week with similar restrictions, Reynolds says. Movies, culture, and camping soon will be back on Iowa's to-do lists, but it will be at least next week before they can head back to their neighborhood bar, and likely longer before they're enjoying amusement park rides or placing bets at an Iowa casino. Governor Kim Reynolds on Wednesday said the coronavirus pandemic has stabilized enough in the state for her to allow indoor movie theaters, zoos, museums, aquariums, and wedding reception venues to resume operations Friday, but only with public health measures to ensure social distancing and proper hygiene. Also, swimming pools will be allowed to open for lap swimming and lessons, but not all, including Cedar Rapids municipal pools, will. Bars and other establishments that serve alcohol will have to wait, bars will have to wait until May 28th to resume operations with restrictions. And starting June 1st, schools can offer school-sponsored activities and learning, including high school baseball and softball, as long as precautions are in place. Quote, "We have to move forward," Reynolds told her daily briefing at the state's Emergency Operations Center. "We have to recognize that the virus is in our communities, and we have to learn to navigate that until or if a vaccine is discovered. And Iowans are doing that, and we're being responsible in the way that we're doing that. I believe that it doesn't have to be either or. We can protect our health as well as our community." Let me start that again. "I believe that it doesn't have to be either or. We can protect the health of Iowans as well as their livelihood and the health of our economy. the governor added, telling reporters, "We have the resources to manage any kind of uptick or surge." The decision means the public has a second chance to see the Impressionism exhibitions at the Cedar Rapids Museum of Art, likely beginning in mid-June. Across the Atlantic, American Impressionism through the French lens, on loan from the Reading Public Museum in Pennsylvania, has been extended through August 30th, and Ooh La La, French works from the Riley Collection, will remain in its second-floor gallery through August 16th. Quote, "I'm thrilled that the governor has allowed the museums to reopen," said Sean Ulmer, executive director at the Cedar Rapids Museum of Art. "People need art and culture now, more than ever. Cultural institutions have a way of helping the healing process." When the museum reopens, all staff and guests will be required to wear masks and practice physical distancing. Reservations won't be required. The National Motorcycle Museum in Anamosa, which initially made plans to open last weekend, is revved up for visitors ages 16 and older to come starting Friday. Staff and patrons will be limited to half capacity and must follow health guidelines. The staff will be wearing masks, and guests are asked to wear their own masks or buy one at the door for $1. The museum will accept only credit and debit cards. Some other museums, including the African American Museum of Iowa in Cedar Rapids, will continue to monitor the reopening process across the state before setting a reopening date, said Executive Director Lanisha Cassell. The museum is prioritizing the safety and well-being of our staff, volunteers, and patrons by establishing clear reopening strategies in a phased process after clear communications have been provided to all concerned parties, she said. Reynolds' proclamation does not reopen casinos or amusement parks in Iowa, but she noted discussions are underway to decide when and how these can resume. Also from the front page of today's Gazette, we have this story. Airport sees 97% drop in passengers. Director says recovery could take years, not months. And the story is by John Steppe of the Gazette. The Eastern Iowa Airport was hit with a 97% drop in passengers in April, as the coronavirus has would-be flyers thinking twice before booking flights. Quote, "For a lot of industries, but aviation in particular, it's unprecedented times," Airport Director Marty Lenz said Wednesday. "There's no other comparison." Passenger totals dropped from 48,626 in April 2019 to 1,483 in April of this year, or about 49 passengers boarding each day. Frontier Airlines, for example, had only 24 passengers at the Cedar Rapids Airport in all of April. There were more passengers on Frontier Airlines, the airline with the smallest footprint at the Eastern Iowa Airport, in April 2019 than total passengers on all airlines carried in April 2020. The massive drop in passenger numbers erased gains from a busy January and February. Passengers are down 25.5% through the first 4 months of 2020. Quote, "We had airlines investing in us going into this," Len said. Len said the airport went from having only 200 parking spaces available in February, with the airport scrambling to find more parking stalls because we were nearing capacity, to having about 250 cars in the entire lot. "A good day at the gift shop now," Len said, "is $200 in sales instead of thousands of dollars in sales." Airlines still have to operate a minimum amount of, I'm going to jump to page 8, to continue, still have to continue flights to receive government assistance through the CARES Act. But even with those requirements, the airport saw a 72.8% reduction in passenger flight arrivals. Delta Airlines, for example, had 250 landings in April 2019, contrasted with 55 landings in April 2020. The drop is despite myriad safety measures by the airport and airlines. The Eastern Iowa Airport is installing protective shields at information counters and stickers on the floor, marking 6 feet of distance in lines. Delta is capping its flight capacity at 60% and not using any middle seats. But good news is elsewhere at the airport. Cargo shipments have increased by 7.5% compared to April 2019, as many people sheltering at home turn to online shopping through Amazon.com and other retailers. Said Lenz, quote, "That continues to be a bright spot for the airport, pre-COVID, and of course post-COVID. But that's not enough to overcome the loss in passengers." Lenz noted the lost revenue is between $1.5 million and $1.7 million each month. The Eastern Iowa Airport is set to finish the third phase of a four-part renovation soon, with a Java House coffee kiosk opening in mid-June. The fourth phase has been postponed indefinitely, Lenz said. The airport commission's cautious spending strategy has limited the financial damage from the pandemic, though. Quote, "We've been very conservative in our planning," Lenz said. "The aviation travel industry ebbs and flows with the economy." The renovation was set up so that construction could stop at the end of any phase while still having a fully functioning airport. Lenz said the airport also has not incurred any debt, allowing for more financial flexibility. To save money, the airport temporarily has closed parts of the terminal to save on utilities and cleaning costs. Part-time employees have worked reduced hours, and the airport is having its staff take care of lawn mowing instead of contracting that work. Lenz said, quote, "We are asking a lot of our teams. Folks are really rising to the challenge." Passenger traffic has dropped dramatically across the country since the start of the pandemic. In some cases, airlines are operating flights with only one passenger to comply with the CARES Act. Delta has needed to issue more than $1.5 billion in refunds nationwide since January, according to an email to upcoming travelers. When airlines do come back, fleets are expected to be smaller than before the pandemic. Said Lenz, quote, "It puts more pressure on communities to have a strong economy. Overall, in the industry, it's going to be smaller. There's no doubt about that. So each and every community out there is going to be competing for fewer airline seats. But there's optimism across the industry as passengers demand gradually increases. Delta will add flights in June," the airline announced Monday. Locally, the Eastern Iowa Airport has seen a recent increase in passenger traffic again, more than twice as much as in April. Said Lenz, quote, "There's some reason to be optimistic. We've hit the bottom of the drop-off, and we're starting to now see an uptick in passengers. The trend line is moving in the right direction." It's still a far cry from a usual pandemic-free May, Lenz. Let me start that again. It's still a far cry from a usual pandemic-free May. Lenz sees the recovery as taking several years, not months, to return to the passenger numbers the airport saw in 2019. Said Lenz, "There's no way to sugarcoat it. We have a long way to go." And now we have this story from the Iowa Today page. Future of area's trash lies with Marion City Council. Solid Waste Agency's proposal will include host fee for city. And this story is by Grace King of the Gazette. The people who run the Linn County landfill will be approaching the Marion City Council in June, asking to expand the landfill on the city's northeast border. and to negotiate a host fee for Marion. The Cedar Rapids, Linn County Solid Waste Agency is proposing to add a sixth cell to the landfill at 1954 County Home Road, which would add 25 years to the landfill's life, taking it to 2074. The agency is proposing paying Marion a host fee of $1 per ton of garbage, or $10 million over the life of the landfill. Without the expansion, the garbage now collected from 17 communities would need to be transported out of county to perhaps another state starting in 2044, agency officials say. That could more than double the current tipping fee of $40 a ton and the garbage bills residents pay. It potentially could cause the loss of about 30 jobs and lead to more illegal dumping in the county, according to the agency's Morgan May. The Marion City Council has agreed to respond to the agency's proposal 30 to 60 days after receiving the formal proposal. Under the proposal, the landfill would not add more land, but would expand to within 600 feet of its property line, which is in line with regulations set by the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. The Solid Waste Agency, which now is opening a fifth cell at the landfill, hopes Marion leaders will agree to a sixth, Mike Duffy, street superintendent for the city of Cedar Rapids. Quote, "We've been talking about this for a long time. It's a question we've been afraid to ask. An answer we certainly need." Cedar Rapids City Council member Tyler Olson, also an agency board member, said he did not want host fees to be part of the conversation with Marion officials, given that he sees advantages to Marion having the landfill operating an additional 25 years. Said Olson, quote, "I think there's some value to not having to do the transfer and having a local resource as a place to take our trash." Linn County Supervisor Brent Olson of Marion, an agency board member, favored offering Marion a host fee, saying the agency also is appealing to the residents of Marion. Quote, "They're not going to do this out of the kindness of their heart," Olson said. "A bunch of people in Cedar Rapids put a landfill in the path of our growth. That's the way they view it. What is the amount of money we can offer to get them to at least negotiate to extend this an additional 25 years? The landfill along County Home Road opened in 1972 with a 30-acre cell. Its footprint now is about 360 acres. Joe Horany, communications director for the Solid Waste Agency, told the agency's board Tuesday the agency is working to find an environmentally sound and economically viable alternative to landfilling by at least 2074. Having the extra capacity is like insurance. Having the extra capacity is like insurance in case a viable alternative is not found, he said. The operation of the landfill was set up in a 2006 settlement between the agency and Marion. It specified the landfill's final elevation could not exceed 914 feet above sea level, with a setback of 1,800 feet from Artesian Road, period. All right, let's turn to the middle of the paper here. We have this editorial from the Gazette, which appears on the inside page of the paper. Iowans pay for lack of oversight. It has been 10 weeks since Governor Kim Reynolds first proclaimed a disaster emergency in response to the coronavirus pandemic. She has updated or extended her disaster proclamation more than a dozen times since then. Under Iowa code, the governor has broad authority to manage the crisis without the usual checks and balances established in our state constitution. That includes her authority to utilize available resources of the state government. Few would quibble with the necessity of strong executive power to manage the immediate impacts of a global public health emergency. But as the pandemic drags on, Iowans are paying a price for the lack of oversight. The Reynolds administration has signed some $45 million in emergency purchase orders for personal protective equipment, according to Associated Press reporting released last week. Especially worrying is a $7.2 million deal for gowns and goggles from a GOP campaign supplier with no experience in the medical supply sector. The owner of the campaign vendor, with ties to Republicans, David Greenspan, is facing felony charges for allegedly beating a woman last year. The state government can consider a business partner's integrity and reliability, but does not run criminal background checks on prospective vendors, the AP reported. The traditional procurement process, which requires an open bidding process, was suspended by Reynolds in March, giving her office total discretion over the Greenspan contract and others. After more than 2 months of running the state with one branch of government controlling the levers, it's time to restore the constitutional limits placed on Iowa's executive branch. About a week after Reynolds' initial emergency proclamation, the Iowa legislature voted to suspend its session, which was extended in March. On June 3rd, lawmakers are expected to resume business, and not a minute too soon. Lawmakers should demand that Reynolds follow standard purchasing practices whenever possible. They also should initiate inquiries on a long list of Iowans' pandemic worries that Reynolds has not adequately answered for, such as the lack of a transparent epidemiological model, period. No, it isn't. I'll try that whole sentence again. They should also initiate inquiries on a long list of Iowans' pandemic worries that Reynolds has not adequately answered for, such as the lack of a transparent epidemiological model that attests Iowa failing to meet its volume goals and policies that jeopardize the health of meat plant workers and long-term care residents. An emergency disaster proclamation is intended for just that, an emergency. To be an emergency, by definition, it must be unexpected. At this point, though, the continuation of the pandemic is very much expected. Whatever our new normal looks like, it must include proper oversight and three functional branches of state government. And again, that is an editorial by the Gazette. Now we'll just drop down the page to community letters, and today we have just one letter. This one is from Amy Johnson of Cedar Rapids. Langston understands county government. I've known Linda Langston both personally and professionally for more than 20 years. I worked with her when she was the executive director of the History Center. I worked with her when she was a Linn County supervisor. She also has been a neighbor and personal friend of my family. In 2016, I had the honor of temporarily filling Linda's seat on the Board of Supervisors when she accepted a new position with the National Association of Counties in Washington, D.C. And now Linda is running to be our next Linn County auditor. Linda is intelligent, articulate, visionary, and insightful. She understands all aspects of our county government extremely well and has wonderful working relationships with our county employees. She understands how important it is to collaborate with others in order to get things done. Most importantly, Linda has a unique way of bringing together people of different backgrounds, beliefs, and perspectives. Her demeanor, her attitude, and her inclusive style are truly inspirational, especially in our partisan world. Finally, I also knew a previous Linn County auditor, Linda Langenberg. I worked with her extensively as a member of the media. I'm sure that Linda Langston would honor the high standards set by Langenberg. I hope you will join me in voting for Linda Langston on June 2nd to be our next Linn County auditor. And again, that letter is from Amy Johnston of Cedar Rapids. And now, you are listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Thursday, May 21st, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. And now we will turn to the obituary page of the Gazette. Under short notices, we have these from Cedar Rapids. Mary Della Magus, 91, died Tuesday, May 19th. Arrangements are with the Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service of Cedar Rapids. From Cedar Rapids, Johnny Cyrus Fulmer, 89, died Tuesday, May 19th. Arrangements are with the Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service of Center Point. From Tama, Lowell George, also known as Bolo Youngbear, 32, died Wednesday, May 20th. Arrangements are with the Cruz Phillips Funeral Home of Tama, Toledo. Now we'll drop down the page for the longer notices. From Anamosa, Janet Steele Andreessen, 86, passed away Tuesday, May 19th at Iowa Masonic Health Facilities in Bentendorf, following a brief battle with cancer. A graveside committal service will be held Friday, May 22nd at Cedar Memorial Cemetery in Cedar Rapids at 11 a.m. Central Time. The Reverend Wade Reddy of Wayne Zion Lutheran Church of rural Monticello will officiate. Virtual attendance is encouraged at Kramer Funeral Home, Facebook Live. A celebration of life for Janet will be held at a later date. From Marion, Ashley Nicole Kajewski, 30, of Marion, passed away Tuesday, May 19th, at the University of Iowa Hospital in Iowa City. A drive-through visitation will be held from 2 to 6 p.m. Friday, May 22nd, at Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Marion. Family and friends will be allowed to pass by Ashley's casket and must remain within your vehicle. We encourage everyone to sign our online guest book and please wear a mask. A private family funeral service will be held with interment to follow at Cedar Memorial Park Cemetery with Pastor Brody Tubau officiating. From Cedar Rapids, Amy Fowler, 93, passed away Tuesday, May 19th, due to the COVID-19 pandemic. The family will not hold a memorial at this time. A private family graveside service will be held at Cedar Memorial Park Cemetery. From Cedar Rapids, Chad Allen Lloyd of Cedar Rapids passed unexpectedly on May 6th at the age of 52. There will be no services held at this time. There will be a celebration of life at a later date to be determined. From Cedar Rapids, Betty L. Schneider, 95, died on Saturday, May 16th, at Heritage Specialty Care in Cedar Rapids. Burial will take place at a later date at Calvary Cemetery in Duluth. Arrangements are with the Stuart Baxter Funeral and Memorial Services in Cedar Rapids. From Cedar Rapids, Cynthia, known as Cindy R. Schamberger, 57, of Swisher, passed away Tuesday, May 19th, of cancer, at the University of Iowa Hospice Center. Please join us for an outdoor celebration of life service at 4 p.m. Friday, May 22nd, with visitation to follow until 6 p.m. at Veritas Church, 700 West Forever Green Road in Tiffin. It is requested that all attendees wear masks and bring your own lawn chairs. From Cedar Rapids, Lee Noel Wells died May 19th from complications of pancreatic cancer. The body will be cremated with a private family burial at a later date. There will be no services. From Coralville, Marilyn Will, 84, of Coralville, died peacefully Friday, May 15th, at her home, following a long determined struggle against COPD. At her bedside were her son, dear friends, and supportive home care aides. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, a gathering to celebrate her life will be held at a later date. From Robbins, James Joseph Bedell, 67, of Robbins, died on Sunday, May 17th, at the Dennis and Donna Oldorf Hospice House of Mercy, following complications from Parkinson's disease. Services will be held at a later date. Burial will be in Mount Calvary Cemetery. Tehan Funeral Home is serving the family. From Robbins, Stephen Robert Prouty of Robbins died on Saturday, May 16th, at age 63. A celebration of life will be held at a later date when extended family and friends can gather safely together. Stuart Baxter Funeral and Memorial Services of Cedar Rapids is assisting the family and is hosting a virtual memorial page where all are welcome to visit and share comfort and memories. Please visit www.stuartbaxter.com and find Steve's tribute wall under the obituaries tab. And finally, Milton Alice Ailes, Kopecky, 85, died of pancreatic cancer on May 17th at his home in Corona del Mar, California. Per Milt's wishes, he will be cremated and there will be no memorial service. Now we'll turn to the sports page, the Gazette, if I could find it. Second. Well, here we are on the sports page. And the lead story here is Boys and Girls of Summer given okay. Looks like high school sports will go forward this summer. High school baseball and softball set to start June 1st with games June 15th. And this story is by Jeff Linder of the Gazette. It's on. Play ball. Wednesday morning, Governor Kim Reynolds gave the green light for high school summer sports in Iowa. Within hours, the state's governing bodies for interscholastic athletics proceeded. As a result, high school baseball and softball are all systems go. Organized practices for baseball and softball may begin June 1st, unless circumstances dictate a change in date, the Iowa Department of Education said. Games may begin June 15th. In both cases, a long list of mitigation efforts are required. In the words of the Department of Education, to help ensure player, coach, and spectator safety during games. After Reynolds' announcement, the IGHSAU Board of Directors and IHSAA Board of Control met and both voted to approve resuming the 2020 summer season under Department of Education guidelines. The guidelines laid out by the Department of Education and the Department of Public Health will enable us to move forward safely with a softball season this summer, IGHSAU Executive Director Gene Berger said in a statement released jointly by both organizations. We are grateful for their leadership and support. We know the games will have different circumstances, and that we will all have to work together to keep everyone safe, but we are confident that we are up to this challenge. IHSAA Executive Director Tom Keating said, "We trust that our administrators, coaches, umpires, and fans will responsibly follow the guidelines in place to keep themselves and each other safe. This is terrific news and is a step toward getting our student athletes reconnected to the activities that mean so much to them. Fans will be permitted at the games." Wednesday's news means that Iowa interscholastic sports will be active for the first time since the end of the boys' state basketball tournament in mid-March. Said Jeff Koenig, Iowa City High softball coach, quote, "This is probably the best day I've had in a couple of weeks. I'm very, very excited." Added Mount Vernon softball coach Robin Brand, "I'm an eternal optimist. I was 85% sure all along that we were going to have a season. I tried to be very hopeful, but I know I had to stay guarded and grounded. I think it will be great for the kids and for the rest of us to get back to our new normal." Lenmar baseball coach Kyle Rodenkirk said the resumption of high school sports give us a chance to get back to some normalcy and for a sense of community. "It's a big deal for the community to come out to a game. It's definitely going to be different. There are going to be a lot more policies in place. It's going to take some getting used to for the kids and coaches." The entire high school spring season, track and field, soccer, golf, and tennis, was wiped out because of the COVID-19 pandemic. State track and field would have been this weekend. The original first practice dates were May 4th for softball and May 18th for baseball. Iowa is the only state in the nation that contests high school baseball and softball in the summer. Coach-athlete contact for all in-person out-of-season sports is suspended until July 1st. Last week, Benton Community Softball coach Eric Stenberg, also an emergency room doctor, sent a proposal to the IGHSAU and IHSAA, spelling out how a summer season could work. Quote, "I think with appropriate precautions and with the assumption that the governor opens things up, that softball and baseball can be done in a safe manner," he said in a Gazette story Monday. "It's something we can pull off." Both organizations plan to conduct their state tournaments at their... Let me try that again. Both organizations plan to conduct their state tournaments at their regular venues. Softball at Rogers Sports Complex in Fort Dodge from July 20th to 24th, and baseball at Principal Park in Des Moines from July 24th to August 1st. "What will the season look like? What will a game look like? We don't know," City High baseball coach Brian Mitchell said. "I'm hopeful we can keep the integrity of the game intact as much as possible and understand there are things that are going to be done." Mitchell understands some may not be comfortable with playing. He said, quote, "Each family has to make decisions they are comfortable with. If a family doesn't feel comfortable for any number of reasons, I totally understand and respect that." According to Cedar Rapids Kennedy Athletics Director Aaron Stecker, a modified Mississippi Valley Conference regular season schedule has been developed, with each division playing a 14-game round-robin schedule. And now I will turn to the back page of the Gazette for the Dear Abby column. Security camera captures man's rant. Dear Abby, a few weeks ago, my husband and I had what I thought was a minor conflict, from which I walked away to avoid escalation. I could hear him continuing to rant, so I pulled up the security camera on my phone and watched and listened as he continued to say horrible things for an hour or more. He called me a disgusting blob, said there is nothing appealing about me, and I should go out in the yard and kill myself just like my father did. The words were so painful that I began to sob uncontrollably. He never came to console me. In fact, he told me to shut up. We have since discussed the event, and his first defense was to say he didn't know I could hear him. I have no family, and I'm hesitant to upend a life that is finally stable after a chaotic childhood and early adulthood. My husband isn't typically abusive, but this incident has me questioning everything. We've been together for 22 years and married for nearly 16 with no children. What are your thoughts? And this one, this letter is signed, Thrown into Turmoil. Dear Throne, you and your husband need to find a healthier way to deal with your conflicts. If your definition of stability is tolerating further verbal abuse, then you are, and will be, paying a high price for it. I hope you will try to iron out your differences with the help of a licensed marriage and family therapist. And now, we will... Another story, if I can find the one I marked. This one is from the Living page of the Gazette. It's called New Business, Old Czech Favorites. Anvil Meat Market in Delhi takes up long legacy of Czech village butcher shops. Anvil Meat... Let me begin again. This article is called New Business, Old Czech Favorites. And the author is Alison Goins of the Gazette. At Anvil Meat Market in Delhi, Stephen Prochaska's new business in Czech Village, some old Czech favorites are coming back. The location housed Village Meat Market from after the flood of 2008 to December period. Before that, it was Polina's Meat Market. Prochaska's great-grandfather used to work there, and Prochaska has many of their classic recipes. There's been a butcher shop or multiple shops on this street for the past 130 years. I think it's super important to have a meat market with some Czech specialties in it, he said. We have natural casing Czech-style hot dogs. I probably sold 50 pounds of them in the first 4 days we were open. I've had a lot of conversations with people about Polina's, those hot dogs, sausages, the butcher loaf they used to do on Saturdays. For those who remember and miss the butcher loaf, Prochaska is making it, and people can order it any day of the week. Alongside of the Czech classics, he has all kinds of meat from ground beef and steaks to deli meats, charcuterie, and sausages. He also makes sandwiches, now available for carryout or curbside pickup, and tentatively plans to open his dining room to customers June 9th. He calls Anvil an East Coast style deli and meat market. Basically, you can get your sub sandwich, lox and cream cheese, bagel, 1 pound pastrami and corned beef sandwiches, Reuben's, Philly's, cheese dips, the old style deli preparations, he said. The business is not a full-service butcher. He's not slaughtering and breaking down whole animals. Instead, sourcing Iowa beef, pork, and chicken from area meat markets. He is, however, making his own sausages, corned beef, pastrami, and more in-house. That pastrami is available only on sandwiches for now. Because it was so popular in the first few days after the shop opened May 14th, he had worried he would run out. He hopes to make it available for sale by the pound in the future. He said, quote, people are very excited about the pastrami. I'm working on it. Prochaska also owns the sausage foundry in Nubo City Market. He said he'd been wanting to open a restaurant for a while, and when Village Meat Market owner Lou Ottinger Thompson decided to retire, he saw his opportunity. Of course, he wasn't expecting a pandemic to coincide with his opening, but he said the challenge and work of launching a new business has been good. He said, quote, "At a certain point, you realize you can work through the fear of uncertainty by keeping your hands busy." He said his meat supply hasn't been affected with shutdowns of meat processing plants as a result of coronavirus outbreaks. That's because he sources from meat lockers that process outside that supply chain. However, he has seen prices rise. Quote, "There is no shortage of beef, pork, or chicken, or lamb, but there is a fairly massive increase in pricing. Over the last 3 weeks, prices of beef, ribeye, probably doubled. We're not going to have super cheap steaks in the case for a while," he said. "But I did make up some ground beef with no limits on how much you can buy. We'll sell what we got." He hopes to keep the Czech village meat market tradition going for a long time. He said, quote, "I plan to be here for the next 25 or 30 years. You've got to set those long-term goals. And who knows, if it takes off, maybe we'll franchise. People are already asking when I'm going to open a deli in Des Moines." And now let's skip down to another story that I had marked in the paper here. Bear with me. Column on the inside page. It's the Todd Dorman column. Budget plan remains in quarantine. In a couple of weeks, Iowa lawmakers will be back at the State House after more than 2 months on a pandemic pause. Non-essential workers, apparently. They're already practicing impressive social distancing, but mainly between Iowans, and any solid details on what the Republican-controlled legislature actually plans to do upon return. The agenda remains in a modified quarantine. In April, Governor Kim Reynolds said she would be releasing a revised state budget plan dealing with revenue losses amid the pandemic and the sharp economic downturn it spawned. She was asked Monday why no plan has yet materialized. Reynolds said, quote, "So we're working with the legislature. They'll be back in June. We're having those conversations. We're going to continue to wait. We'll have a better idea by the end of May." Reynolds said the potential for state revenue losses is one reason she's moved to reopen businesses across the state and remove some pandemic safety restrictions. "So we know the fiscal situation is bad enough to roll the dice on reopening, sidestepping the advice of Iowa health experts. But the true scope of revenue losses remains publicly fuzzy. Last week, the Nonpartisan Legislative Services Agency reported that between March 19th and May 13th, state revenues declined by $531 million compared to a year ago. Much of that loss, however, was attributed to a moving tax filing. Let's begin that sentence again. Much of that loss, however, was attributed to moving tax filing deadlines from April to July, giving individuals and businesses more time to pay. But sales taxes and an array of other tax collections have declined. Iowa's revenue estimating conference is expected to meet May 29th to set new numbers lawmakers will use to rebuild their budget plans. So far, all we've learned from Republican law leaders is that Iowa has nearly $800 million in reserves and a projected surplus cushion thanks to their budget stewardship. Nothing to see here, but that hasn't worked out so well elsewhere. Ohio also was projecting a surplus earlier this year, but now is looking at a $777 million budget hole. Republican Governor Mike DeWine warns the state will need all of its $2.7 billion in reserves to get through the next 2 years. Michigan and Colorado also expect their healthy reserves to dry up as revenue losses mount. An estimate by Moody's puts Iowa potential revenue loss at 11.4% to 14%, possibly topping $1 billion. That would eclipse the 9% hit tax collections took during the Great Recession. Back then, the federal government stepped in to provide Iowa with considerable fiscal help, which softened the blow. That sort of help may or may not be coming this time, and I haven't heard Iowa Republicans ask their good friend in the White House for assistance. And Republicans might not even tap Iowa's healthy reserves. House Speaker Pat Grassley, according to Radio Iowa, said he wants the budget to stick with projected revenues, not dip into cash reserves, to fund ongoing programs. That could lead to deeper cuts. So what's being talked about in all of these conversations Reynolds referred to? Who knows? Will Iowans have more than days or hours to assess the GOP budget after it springs from a back room? No worries. The wise stewards have got this. But please keep your distance. And again, that is the Todd Dorman column from the inside page of the Gazette. And I believe that will do it for today. Indeed, it is. That does it for today. Today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette. Today, Thursday, May 21st, I'm your reader, Jim Hill. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thank you for listening.
People's Pharmacy Health Headlines. With half a dozen measles outbreaks currently underway in the U.S., as well as several serious international outbreaks, the news on measles vaccine from Denmark is important. Researchers conducted a nationwide study that included everyone born between 1999 and 2010. With more than 650,000 children in that group, they had more than 5 million person-years of follow-up. The Danish health system keeps excellent records on all of its citizens, including the children. Consequently, the scientists are confident that the 6,517 children diagnosed with autism during the study period are all the children who developed this condition. Children who did not receive the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, or MMR, were equally likely as vaccinated children to develop autism. The investigators conclude, the study strongly supports that MMR vaccination does not increase the risk for autism, does not trigger autism in susceptible children, and is not associated with clustering of autism cases after vaccination.
The Food and Drug Administration has just approved a completely new type of antidepressant. The nasal spray, called esketamine, is expected to help people who have not responded to standard antidepressants. It will be marketed under the brand name Spravato. This drug is chemically related to the injectable anesthetic ketamine that's been on the market since 1970 and is available generically. Although esketamine is administered as a nasal spray, people will not be permitted to purchase it for home use. They will need to use Spravato under medical supervision at a clinic or doctor's office. Some experts have challenged the FDA's approval process for esketamine. While two clinical trials demonstrated some benefit, two others did not show that esketamine is better than placebo. Side effects of this novel antidepressant include nausea, dizziness, headache, and a feeling of dissociation.
FDA Commissioner Dr. Scott Gottlieb unexpectedly announced his departure from the agency this week. Experts were puzzled by his announcement since he has received high marks from the administration, industry, and even some consumer groups. Dr. Gottlieb has raised questions about teen vaping and has been an outspoken critic of pharmacy chains that sell tobacco products to minors. Some commentators speculate that these stances might be related to his abrupt departure. His explanation for the sudden departure is that he wants to spend more time with his wife and young children. Dr. Gottlieb is a survivor of Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Another week, another drug recall. Many lots of ARB blood pressure drugs, including losartan, valsartan, and irbesartan, have been recalled over the past 8 months. These medicines were contaminated with potential carcinogens known as NDMA and NDEA. Now, Hetero Labs has recalled 87 lots, and Tarrant Pharmaceuticals Limited is recalling 100 lots of losartan tablets. These pills contain an entirely new contaminant just identified as NMBA. It, too, is a suspected carcinogen. All three of these nitrosamine contaminants are apparently created as a result of the manufacturing process. FDA Commissioner Gottlieb stated, "We're making important strides at understanding how these impurities form, and we're continuing to examine if nitrosamine impurities may also arise during the manufacture of other ARB drug products. The FDA is committed to implementing measures to prevent the formation of these impurities during drug manufacturing processes in the future."
Cocoa flavonoids may have some benefit for people with multiple sclerosis, according to a small study. Previous research showed that dark chocolate rich in cocoa compounds might improve symptoms of chronic fatigue. The investigators recruited 40 people with relapsing remitting MS to drink cocoa every day for 6 weeks. 19 of them got high flavonoid cocoa, while 21 drank low flavonoid cocoa. At the end of the study, those on the high flavonoid cocoa had slightly less fatigue and could walk somewhat farther in 6 minutes than they had at the outset. They also reported less pain. And that's the health news from the People's Pharmacy this week.